Hi, my name is Jenny Hickson, and I'm a doctoral student at the University of Texas School of Public Health in San Antonio. And what we're going to watch today is a documentary that I produced with my fellow students and with a community group that we were working with in Gillespie County, which is a small rural county that's about 65 miles northwest of San Antonio, Texas. So before we watch that, I'm going to give you a super brief introduction, and then we'll watch the documentary. We split it up into two sections. There's a sort of introductory documentary, and then there's a little presentation of our findings, and then there's a second part that's the key informant interviews, the folks who allowed us to include them in the documentary. So in the fall of 2009, a Gillespie County group that is called a Translational Advisory Board, which doesn't really mean anything except to tell you that it was a group of folks who are interested in improving the health of their county, got together and received some information that the local high school had experienced a doubling in the number of students in their pregnant or parenting teens program. Now, this is a very small county with a very small population, so doubling meant going from 14 to 28, which is not something that people in urban areas would find alarming, but for them it was something they were worried about. So they asked the School of Public Health in San Antonio if we could help them figure out what was going on, if there was an explosion in teen pregnancy, or what was the true story behind this number. So our team was myself, Elizabeth Martinez, who is a member of the Community Translation Science Award Community Outreach Resource Center that we have at the School of Public Health. Joseph Fauma and Joseph Yambo Arias are both family physicians in the military. San Antonio has an extremely large military presence, and some of our MPH students are also family practice doctors in the Army. So both of these gentlemen are family practice doctors in the military, and Kathy Urbanski, who is another MPH student. So why did we decide to do a documentary? We had initially done the traditional public health report that everybody's familiar with, right? The 200-page report that nobody reads but you. And when we went out and did our little PowerPoint presentation to the community, we were kind of getting blank looks, which we didn't want. So we went back and looked at all the information that we had gathered. We had videotaped and audiotaped all of our interviews and most of what we had done, and so we asked permission from the people we had interviewed and audiotaped to use that and turn it into a documentary that we could use to report the findings back. So it's a very small, cohesive community, but the overwhelming theme that we got from the key informant interviews was we don't talk about sex here. And so when we were trying to do a presentation, we were again getting the same, we don't talk about sex, thank you for your presentation. But when we used the documentary, we actually got a lot of people talking. And today, the reason I'm the only person here from my group is that the school board is voting on whether or not to adopt a new sex ed curriculum this afternoon. So the rest of the folks that I worked with are currently in Gillespie County helping with that presentation. So do you want to? And this was community edited, so, you know, we're not professional.
Approximately 26% of the population is age 25 or younger, and Lens County was quickly becoming a county with two populations, older and wealthy, and younger and lower income.
Price for this tourist community, we definitely thrive on tourism in this city, and it's grown tremendously since I was young.
But it's an interesting community. It tends to be a little bit of a sticker head around. We're this nice little tourist town that has when you drive in, Main Street's nice and clean, and you read the newspaper, and the front page article this week is about kids going deer hunting and hunting season and stuff. And, you know, that's the big news in town. The crime of the week this week for the police report was a story during a golf course that got broken into, and there were two meat eaters and a chainsaw taken. And so, yeah, that's kind of our little image. And so we don't like to talk about the team drinking and the field parties that happen and the, you know, stuff like that.
In the fall of 2009, the UT School of Public Health student group partnered with the Gillespie County Tab to explore the issue of teen pregnancy in the community. Community health leaders had heard from a variety of sources that the local high school was experiencing an increase in pregnant students. The TAB asked the students to look into the actual number and rate of teen pregnancies, explore community opinions, and possible remedies to the problem if one exists. The School of Public Health students developed a plan. We would explore extant data from the school district, hospital, and vital records, survey community opinion leaders about teen pregnancy, and interview community members about teens, the community, and sex ed. But before we explore the local problem, we had to find out, what do we already know about teen pregnancy and sex ed in this country? Though teen pregnancy continues to be a problem today, the highest rate of teen pregnancy was actually during the 1950s. Post-war euphoria combined with access to cars was a high rate of teen pregnancy. The rate of first teen mothers was 97%. However, women in the 1950s were more likely to get married as teenagers or to become married shortly after becoming pregnant. The average age of marriage in post-war America dropped to age 20. A broad combination of public health interventions resulted in a drop in teen pregnancy from the 1970s through the 1990s. In 2004, the Wall Street Journal called the drop in teen pregnancy a rare public health victory. In 2006, the CDC released information that the teen pregnancy rate was going up for the first time in several decades. The U.S. continues to have the highest teen pregnancy rate of any industrialized country. Higher than Great Britain, Portugal, Australia, France, Italy, Spain. Well, you get the idea. Currently, one in three teens becomes pregnant before age 20. Texas has the third highest rate of teen pregnancy in the country. But the question still remains, why should we care about teen pregnancy? Well, teen mothers are more likely to drop out of school, to become roommates from their parents, to live in poverty. They're twice as likely to have low birth weight babies. They're twice as likely to have preterm delivery. And they're three times as likely to experience neonatal death. Because become the victims of abuse and neglect, to be incarcerated as a young adult, and to become a teen parent themselves. And then we see a lot of it in 3 years, when they're 3 years older, here they are, and they have a responsible parent, maybe, or you have a child that's been neglected, or you have a child that has no social skills, you have a child that's like, you know, behavior skills are not well, and it's like, well.
Then what to say anymore? Teen fathers also face consequences for teen pregnancy. Teen fathers are more likely to have less education and lower income than men waiting until later to become fathers.
I think what's interesting is early on the father may be involved and interested, but then they lose if they're having this child out of wedlock, and or there's the decision among the parents to not get married and continue their relationships apart from each other. What I find is, and what I'm familiar with is, the fathers, as they get involved with other families, start other families, they're less involved in those children's lives that they had.
Communities with high rates of teen pregnancy also experience high dropout rates, persistent poverty, and limited vocational opportunities. But even if the social class doesn't matter,
there's a fund to pay for that child for their daycare while you continue to be in high school, which I think is awesome. But you've made that real easy. There's Medicaid, which you are definitely going to qualify for Medicaid. The Medicaid program is going to cover all your expenses. Okay, so you're going to care. And then you're going to have the WIC program, which is going to supply your formula. Okay, so and I think all these things are wonderful, but then have you made it real easy?
Okay, so I know it's kind of melodramatic, but that was the intention. it was sort of to try to spark conversation. So the question that we were asked to answer is there an increase in teen pregnancy in Gillespie County? We found two things. One, teen population has been remarkably stable in this county over the course of 10 years. It fluctuates about 5% in either direction, but it's overall been about stable. This is the enrollment in the local high school from grades 8 through 12, and you can see it kind of bobbles a little, but really it stays between 1,000 and 1,200. And the local high school, there's basically one school district in Gillespie County. There is a second school district, but it has a much smaller population. But this is what we use as our reference population. We're pretty confident that this is a good estimate of the size of teenagers in Gillespie County. So vital statistic records were only available through 2006 when they asked us to look at this, and they were pretty convinced that there was this explosion happening in the last 2 years. So they wanted more recent data. What we did is we went back and looked at vital statistics for 15 years because, as everybody knows, when you're dealing with such small numbers, small increases or decreases in either direction can look really dramatic. So we looked at 15 years and found that it looked like the teen pregnancy, the teen births, now this is not including abortions, so this is just births. We did look at abortion data, and that's later, but that the number of teen births was staying relatively stable. Again, with a stable population, it didn't look like there was any major shifts going on. Same thing, teen pregnancy rate's about the same. The one thing that we got that people were saying is, oh, it's because we're having a younger Hispanic population move in. That was also not true. Births are roughly even between both white and Hispanic teens. The Hispanic teens do not appear to be driving an increase in births. The number of births is representative to the percent of the teen population that they represent. Every student who accesses pregnant or parenting services is counted in the PEP program. It's important to note that the totals are cumulative, meaning that if you have a baby when you're 14, you're going to be counted again when you're 15 and you're 16 and you're 17. That was not something that they understood when they first got the data from the school district that showed this huge increase. They thought it was unique students each year. And so that was really the piece of data that they were most worried about. So this was what the Gillespie tab that we were working with, this is the chart that they were given by a school board member that set off this whole question is, do we have a doubling? So you can see there they went from having 12 students in the 03-04 school year to having 26 in the 08-09. And they were very worried about that. Hill Country Memorial is the only hospital that provides labor and delivery services in Gillespie County. It takes about an hour and a half to get from Gillespie to San Antonio or to get to Austin. So most women who are residents of Gillespie go ahead and deliver at Hill Country Memorial unless they have a high-risk birth and for some reason know that they need to be in San Antonio before they deliver. And I already said that. So this was the information. What we did is we compared vital statistics numbers to Hill Country Memorial numbers to see if Hill Country Memorial was pretty accurate in having capturing most of the deliveries so that we could compare their numbers for 2007, 2008, and 2009 and get more recent data. And you can see that though there's a little gap here and there that for the most part it's pretty close. So the 2009 number was actually a projection from the number of births that they had had up to the point when we were doing the assessment. And that number actually ended up being 19 in the final data analysis. So we had the information about the teen births, and essentially what we came back with is that there was not an increase in teen births that was enormous. There was an increase in the number, but it did not look like it was something that was out of the range of normal for the county. But they had asked us to look into attitudes towards sex ed and teen pregnancy in general in the county. So we did a community leader survey. This is part of a larger assessment that we did for the county where we also looked at suicide. From the documentary, they have a very, their population is much older than most Texas counties, and they have a high rate of suicide in older white men, and so they wanted us to try to figure out what was behind that. So we did this survey that looked at both children and youth issues and mental health and elderly issues. So we did a SurveyMonkey survey. We also did a paper survey that we mailed out because many residents in the county don't have access to internet. There were 111 completed surveys. They were 86% white, and the average age was 56. Usually an 86% white is not representative. For this county, for the age profile that we had, that was actually a representative sample. And it was representative in terms of gender as well. So we asked people to rank a huge list of issues about what were the most important issues for their county. 77% said that teen pregnancy was an issue of greater concern, and only 2% said that it was an issue that they were not concerned about. 60% said that they were concerned about sex ed in the local area, but significantly, well, I'll get to that in a second. So we asked about what's the best way to teach sex ed in your area. For those of you who are familiar at all with Texas sex ed, you'll know that 93% of our school counties teach abstinence-only sex ed with widely varying quality. There's not always evidence-based programming going on in our schools. So we asked, what are the three best ways, of these three ways, what do you think is the best way to teach sex ed? Abstinence only, so abstinence is the primary focus. Abstinence plus, which is that abstinence is a primary focus, but discussion of condoms and contraceptive methods is appropriate. And comprehensive, where abstinence is one of a menu of options that teens are presented with about sex ed. So, we found that 93% of survey respondents would prefer comprehensive or abstinence plus sex ed. These survey respondents were, we used snowball sampling to identify community leaders. They were nominated by the Gillespie County tab, which included members of the health board, the school board, lots of different places. And we also used the Community Needs Council, which is the group that has all of the nonprofit agencies in the county, also nominated people. So these are largely people, when we did the analysis of the demographics, who work in social services and education. And they feel that abstinence only is not working. And this is consistent with state and national survey findings. In 2004, 80% of parents reported they favored abstinence plus or comprehensive. And a local survey of Bexar County, which is where San Antonio is, found that 80% of parents preferred abstinence plus or comprehensive sex ed. So the survey findings were not aligned with what we kind of expected to find. So the next question was, how satisfied are you with the sexual and reproductive health programs at the local school district? Significantly, even though people said they were worried about teen pregnancy, most people have no idea what's going on in the school district. So they are concerned about it, but not necessarily concerned enough to find out what's going on. 36% were not satisfied, only 1% were very satisfied. And we'll go ahead and watch the second half. This is, we did a lot of key informant interviews. We did 21 key informant interviews that we included in this sample. We did more key informant interviews, some of which folks asked to keep anonymous. So they were not included in the data analysis, but we ended up talking to, I think, 34 people in total. Could you play the second one? Actually, the second one. This is the family planning clinic.
Because there might be that which one. And I
but I am not familiar with any placement.
Heard what the school does, it's real kind of basic anatomy. It's not really anything else. And I think that the parents as well, I think it's been generations after generations, parents, you know, the same thing that their parents did, just kind of like, I don't want to pretend that's going on, you know, but that's what it's not. You know, I mean, like, oh, you can't hear just be safe. But I do think that it's a constant anxiousness about parents to do the choices and reminders to make the choices.
The only thing that they can talk about is the infections you could get if you were to have sex. And of course, that abstinence is just what they're doing, abstinence, and that's really all.
My impression is that we don't talk about these kinds of things. And sexuality, there is this myth among certain socioeconomic and cultural influence that says if we talk about sexuality, somehow we're encouraging sexuality. And in fact, the research is clear that when you talk about sexuality, then better choices. So my sense is here that it's probably not a subject that you're allowed to bring up and talk about, and because their parents are afraid, they're going to be encouraging their parents to participate and just have fun.
111 leaders surveyed, 93% said they prefer to form sex education either comprehensive or abstinence plus.
You guys as a parent, you send them to church, they go there, and you know, we talk about that, about the chastity, and we talk about all that. And I think that's the biggest problem. And so the kids recognize the more to be accepted of each other.
The communication between the generations is pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, even the teachers.
So if children cannot approach their dad and their mom for important issues, if they're afraid of the responses and communications, if they're, how are they going to come talk to them about the fact that they may be seeing a boyfriend or someone who's pressuring them for sexual relations?
You know, if you look at the numbers, 4 or 5 years ago, we actually had very low teen pregnancy rate. So did people just fall asleep at the wheel and decide it wasn't as big a deal to start warning kids anymore? I mean, I don't know. I do know that there tends to be a culture in the town, I think, of just assuming the best things are happening and not worrying about bad things happening.
Okay. So, the findings that we reported back were that the raw number of teen births have increased over the last year, but we don't know that that's a sustainable increase or the result of an increasing trend. And that we should keep an eye on it, but that it's not, we're not ready to cry wolf yet. But significantly, we did find that the community lacks leadership around teen pregnancy and sexual health. A lot of the interviews that we weren't able to include, we would say, who do you think teens go to for information about teen sexual health? And this was what happened. Everybody went, And that was about what we got. So nobody knew who teens were going to get information. And the answer is there really isn't either. There's significant community concern about teen pregnancy. People are worried about it, but they're not worried enough to necessarily find out what's going on. So what we did with this assessment is that we showed this documentary to a town hall and reported our assessment findings. And like I said earlier, the school board is holding a meeting, today, not tomorrow when we wrote this, that's going to discuss changing the local sex ed curriculum. Local leaders are also planning to attend the 40 developmental assets training that's being offered in Houston this fall. What they came away from this assessment and what we recommended to them was that there isn't comprehensive support for teenagers in their area, that they don't have jobs, they don't have things to do, that they need more social support. So aside from the sex ed issue, they're looking at more global ways that they can support their teens. So that's all that I have. Some of the limitations of this are obviously we had a very compressed timeline. We were trying to get this done in 2.5 months. That there was a scarcity of reliable data that we could definitely be sure was capturing everything we wanted to. And the reluctance of the community to discuss this issue. We called a lot of people, and a lot of people weren't interested in talking. So it's sort of a skewed sample because it's only the people who wanted to talk to us who are probably the people who were most concerned about it anyway. So thank you. We don't have a moderator, so does anybody have questions?
I don't have questions, but I want to make a comment because I'm an evaluator on an abstinence education program. Mm-hmm. And we did a longitudinal study over 5 years, and students were either in a comparison group where they did not get the abstinence education program and the or in the intervention group. We measured kids over a period of 5 years.
Yeah, and I think really what we were trying to suggest to them is that they needed to find evidence-based programming. What they were doing was not an evidence-based program, and regardless of whether you fall in abstinence only, abstinence plus, comprehensive, if it's not an evidence-based program, well then you have no idea. So that's really what they're voting on, is moving from sort of a let's throw this on the wall and hope it works program to an evidence-based program. Our IRB did not allow us to talk to kids. We were trying to do a rapid appraisal. So, I mean, as you know, when you talk to minors, you get into a whole bunch more issues. Many of the folks that we talked to intentionally had been teen parents themselves in the county. And that was part of when we did the key informant interviews, we tried to be very targeted about talking to folks who had been teen parents or who, like the folks who worked at Head Start, who worked with teen parents a lot. But that is a major limitation that had we had more time, we would have definitely done. Well, so we had gotten their permission to videotape and audiotape the interviews to use for the analysis. And we had actually included in there that we would use it for report back But before we wanted to include them, we wanted to make sure that people were really okay with it. So even though we had their consent, we wanted to be sure we had double consent because it was so touchy. And so what we did is we developed the thing, well, first we asked if we could use their video. And some people had decided that they really didn't want to talk. There were some other things that happened in the town during the time we were doing this assessment that shifted the ground a little bit. But so we asked if we could include it. Some people said, yes, absolutely. Some people said, yeah, I think so. Just let me look at it before I see it. And then some people said, no, thanks. And so we respected that as much as we could. Well, we absolutely respected it. And some of the interviews we didn't end up including because since we weren't shooting it, planning to be in a documentary, some of the quality was really horrid and only useful if you were doing it for qualitative, you know, if you're trying to pull something from it. So. Yes. Mm-hmm. We did. It very well may have. What we did is we called people and we said, you know, these are the two groups that we're working with. We had the endorsement of the local health board as well as the Gillespie County TAB, and we said, we're working with these two groups, and they've asked us to explore this issue. Can we come and talk to you? You've been recommended as somebody that we should talk to. And if they said yes, then we sent them the interview script that we had developed and said, please look over these questions and make sure that you're comfortable talking to us about this. And we're going to film you, and here's the consent form we're going to ask you to fill out. And some people pulled out at that point. They either didn't want to talk about the issue or they just didn't want to participate for whatever reason. We had several people cancel as we were actually driving into their parking lot that they said, actually, we don't want to talk about it. It is a very conservative rural area, and the theme we got from everybody was we don't talk about this here. So I don't know that it had anything to do with us filming or videotape. I think people just didn't want to talk about it because we offered to do anonymous interviews just because we needed some of the information we really needed to understand. We were trying to figure out, had something changed at the local high school, and we really were trying to talk to anybody who could give us that information, and most of those interviews were anonymous. Yes.
Oh, for me?
Yes. Sorry. Do you have a feeling for, or did you do any exploration of Samoan communities in the U.S. and whether they make appropriate with the appropriate still needed?
No, we actually didn't. There are actually kind of differences between the Samoan communities within the states and back on the island. So we just stuck with on the island, but we did actually look at some other radio programs. There was somewhere in the Midwest, I forget the name of it, but there was one that was geared towards African Americans for breast cancer. I forget the name. I meant to put it in there, but there was also one that we found. I think it was in Africa that they were doing in regards to HIV education and things like that. So sorry. Oh. And, me? Oh.
I was really impressed with what you put together with so very little resources. I want to commend you on that.
Oh, thank you.
I was thinking, I actually take in some students in the Philippines, and one of the topics, they have an issue with breast cancer too, and I think you mentioned you were starting to work with the Philippines and the defendants.
Right.
If there could be something that could be placed on your island to help these people get like secondary and tertiary care, I encourage you to but I like the radio presentation. You reached out to people. You made it a difference. The other question would be, did you provide the people with a list of resources where they could go and where they saw? And that would be my next step to you. Continue your radio program, if you could, and tell people where they could go to get further information. I mean, maybe that wasn't one of the films that we did with this one.
Yeah, you're right. We actually provided the information within the episodes. They were told on when the after-hour clinics were going to be, and actually where the locations were going to be and what time, and the phone numbers that they could call. So they were in there.
But keep it up, because I think you did a fabulous job, and it's such a big issue, and we can implement the screenings that identified earlier, we would save more lives and waiting for their. And then you were working with the photographers, too, which,
right.
I think is sometimes hard to, but that's
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, we probably could, but we didn't look into it at the time. So we actually do want to continue like another five episodes, because when we kind of left it as a cliffhanger, you know, her friend actually ends up passing away, and she ends up coming around full circle to go ahead and take charge of her health and her life, and she goes and she finally gets a mammogram done, and at the very end, she goes into the doctor's office and he tells her, well, your results are, and he never mentions them, because we wanted the women to feel like they were the main character, and for them to find out what happened was for them to go in and get screened and seen, so. Yeah, they don't. Our radio stations are kind of limited in their reporting, so we couldn't really find out. That's what we kind of had to do our own assessment, and we found out like a lot of the villages that are on island actually did have at least one woman that had heard the radio dramas on the island. So. Right. So, sorry, I guess one more question.
For us, that was the intention of why we tried the traditional public health reporting with our first report back, and you know, we did this again, like we always do. And I'm just about ready to end my career, say forget this. But I think that for this particular issue, I do think that having people that they recognize reflect back some of these things made a bigger difference. I mean, it's basic community-based participatory stuff. I can tell people until I turn blue that, you know, they're worried about this, but to hear it from somebody that they trust makes all the difference. So, and also, I'll honestly, the first 10 minutes, it was intentionally a little dramatic, and you're just not going to get the same sort of impact from PowerPoint. And we're so used as a culture to accepting information that we receive this way. So that was, I think for us, that's why we were surprised that the school board actually is considering moving, because that doesn't often happen. But I think what we're most happy about is that it's not just about teen pregnancy, but that they're looking at developmental assets and looking at sort of the community-based approach to youth development. All right. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.